Oh, look at you with your fancy party hat on, Simo. Is it... Now, come on. It's not just Christmas. Is it because we've got a famous guest on?
Oh, yeah. We're excited about this one. Christmas jingles and everything that comes with it.
I have to say, I don't mind admitting this in public, my hats usually break because I've got such a big head. You see, it's
well, when you come on. Let's see. Just go on. Let's put it on. Put it on and see if this one breaks.
There you go. It's teetering on the brink. It's you see, the big head is from working with stars like you.
Oh.
Anyway, party season is here, Simo. Come on, deep breath.
Christmas. It's The Right Move, the leading property podcast with Andrew Simmons and JP. And maybe the occasional mince pie.
I'm conscious, Simo, that it does seem a bit previous, well, it's not even Christmas yet when we're recording this, to make mention of Boxing Day already. But the way that, as public consumed property, i.e. searching on the net, sometimes to be dominated by what happens on Boxing Day, i.e. the Boxing Day bounce. So we're going to have a look at that, aren't we?
Yeah, we'll have a look at it and we'll talk through what is good for both vendors and buyers, really.
Yep, and there's another story that we'll explore in the episode that sits, I think, really nicely with that one. The property journalist Russell Quirk has done a piece on Right Move, as in the portal, as opposed to this podcast. So that's something we're going to run the rule over as well.
Yeah, indeed. And is it the only portal? Yeah, we'll have a look at that as well.
Well, the chef and frequent self-builder, Alan, who's been giving us his updates on his own self-build in Northamptonshire, will be coming on soon with his snappy audio diary about his build, and maybe a cheeky seasonal plug for his pub, a tasty Christmas menu, and why not? And naturally, we've some Charlie Says, as we always do, from Charlie Lambden, who is very keen to share his thoughts on the autumn statement, the mini budget, if you like. And Simo, without saying who our big guest is on the episode, what can you say about it?
Well, we've got to roll some drums, haven't we, JP?
Oh, yeah.
She is a TV celeb. She hasn't gone to the jungle, though, even though she's a morning TV presenter. Not like we're seeing another celeb, actually local to me here in Bristol, in the jungle. This is a very renowned interiors celebrity. Let's leave it there. Okay. Leave people hanging for a second.
Tantalising stuff, eh, Simo? That and bags of festive cheer.
Get all your festive property goodies on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
Well, yes, hello, welcome. Thanks for being with us to the Christmas edition of The Right Move, the leading property podcast. Now, what is the biggest thing that people do on Boxing Day? Make turkey curry? Try and find a cure for that banging hangover? No, they make a beeline for the property portals to look at houses online. How sociable, Simo. I mean, should people, as a headline, should people put so much stock in Boxing Day when it comes to having a house on the market or looking for one?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because you would think that at Christmas, people want to go out to the sales. They've got Christmas out of the way. They're spending time with the family, eating those mince pies, which I've got a lovely one by the side of me here with a dollop of clotted cream on top. But apparently, people go to the portals. Now, I say apparently, I have two minds about Boxing Day. And I say this to my clients all the time. Is it really the time to go live? Or is it better to go live on Christmas Eve, being slightly controversial? Or in fact, wait to the New Year weekend? Now, of course, it all depends on when that day falls in, because obviously each year things fall differently on different days of the week, Boxing Day particularly. So when is the right time? I don't think there is a right or wrong time. The problem that you have, and this is trying to give a bit of a balanced view, yes, people over Christmas tend to think right, wouldn't it be nice? Maybe let's go into next year, you know, New Year's resolution, et cetera, and we'll think about selling our house. And then they might go on there and say, oh, I wonder what's available. So they go and have a look. And of course, those that have been listed that day will appear at the top of any listing on the portals, and it'll say the newest. And of course, if there's a house that's been listed since the summer, it will be further down the portals. And it's always been this trick to stick properties live at certain times to get them to the top of listings.
Yeah.
But you only have to do that if you've got people at that point in time looking. Now, if somebody's looking on Boxing Day and they haven't sold their house, then they're looking and they will probably go to an agent in the new year, and then they will probably look to put their house on. And actually, they probably might miss the boat with that house that they've seen, unless they've got a very saleable house. Also, they then have to have time in the new year when everybody opens back up to go and get their property listed. So is Boxing Day the right time? I think it's a bit of a myth, really. Mm. Yes, people do look at portals, but I won't name the portal, but one of the property portals in the UK is the second most visited website in the UK after Amazon. So it's always going to have people going to it and having a look and then making a, you know, making a beeline. And a lot of the time, you know, it's just people sat at home a bit bored and they're looking. There will be those people that will be genuinely over that festive period wanting to prepare to sell. And those are the people that are the genuine buyers and the genuine vendors. So I think that's the way to look at it. There's no right or wrong answer to Boxing Day, but I think it's a reason to use some marketing to gain people to look at instructions. Mm. Now, for us as a business, we have listed a couple of properties in December, but that is because those vendors have particularly wanted them to be listed in December. But we're telling people that we'll prepare for the new year. So we've stacked up a few, and we've made a decision this year. So my sales managers and I have sat down and we've made this decision that Boxing Day isn't going to be the day that we're going to go live on our new listings, but it's rather going to be New Year's Eve weekend. So the Saturday before, so the following weekend, just to give a bit of balance, because it's anyone's guess is when people are looking. And they're looking all the time. It's generally the Christmas Boxing Day one is because somebody's a bit bored, sat at home. They've had enough of reruns of Only Fools and Horses, and they want to have a look at the portals.
Yeah. I think there's an immense amount of truth, as always, with what you say in that, with your observations, Simo, and also the inside of the kind of two hat thing, your expertise from within agency. And I've got to say, from a, you know, Joe Public point of view, a layman's perspective, I did wonder, and I guess you've kind of confirmed it up to a point, whether the bounce part in Boxing Day bounce had just become a bit of a, you know, another one of these lazy catch-all terms where it makes it sound more effective, better, you know, a more proficient sales tool than it actually is. So yeah, I think you've given a great deal of perspective to that, which is always really, really helpful. Now, this, I think, relates pretty well, beautifully, I guess, to that. And I'm going to start off with a quote. Did you hear the story? This needs to be more menacing, really, I guess. But did you hear the story of the estate agency boss who cancelled his Rightmove contract and awoke the next morning to find a horse's head in his bed? They're the words of Russell Quirk on propertyindustryeye.com. Russell is suggesting that it's a protection racket of sorts. Are the public shortchanged in all of this, Simo? I mean, we could kind of spend a lot of time unpicking the estate agent implications. You've spoke very freely, very openly on a number of episodes about the incredible cost, a lack of consistency with having your own account manager, that sort of thing, and how often that changes the turnover. But in the sort of thing that Russell has asserted here, are the public coming out of this shortchanged?
Interestingly, in the last couple of days, I've had an email from Rightmove with my seventh account manager in 2 years.
No.
So there we go. That probably says it all from an industry perspective. I think it's very difficult until people realize what Rightmove are about as opposed to the other portals. Now, in my view, there are better portals. There are portals that provide a far better experience and a far better service to their clients, which are obviously the agents that pay to list on there. The problem that we have is that everybody says, right move, right move, right move. They were the first, they were the leaders, they were out there, they were at the beginning, and they have been the go-to portal for the consumer for far too long. And something needs to be done about it. I've spoken about it before, and I will go blinding down the road that on the market have an absolute golden egg in their new investment to take the fight. But in one sense, the issue that we have with Rightmove is that I do agree that if you come off of Rightmove, then you're going to be, as an agent, you're in the dust. You frankly are. And I agree with Russell quite strongly that, and again, openly, that one of my account managers turned around to me, and when I questioned the value in what we pay, he said, we have a monopoly, and if you had the monopoly, you would do the same. And I find that such an arrogant approach. Yeah. But that's what's drummed into every account manager at Rightmove. Yeah. It's, we're the number one, basically take it or leave it. During COVID, when agents were closed and agents didn't know where the next, you know, the property market was put completely on hold. Nobody knew what, whether anyone could move house, whether anyone could do a viewing, you know, houses that were in the process of going through sales progression were basically in complete limbo. Nobody knew what on earth was going to be going on. There was a huge drive amongst agents to cancel their Rightmove contracts. They did. Lots of agents did. And then suddenly realized how much traffic they lost in their day-to-day business. Their traffic dropped off a cliff. You know, it's not like the old days where you had a newspaper article or newspaper with all the pages. And you remember those days where you'd flick through and you'd get the paper every week and, you know, you'd be in there as a listing. Now, if you're not on Rightmove, sadly, you as an agent will have, you're not going to get any traffic. Until we educate the public that there are far better ways to buy property. And when I mean far better ways are to have relationships with estate agents, to go in and talk to them, get people to understand what you want, not just, oh, look, there's a house for sale. Oh, that looks good. I'll go and have a look at it. It is go and give an agent your wish list. You know, we've spoken to Jerome. You know, buying agents are becoming so much more popular for people. Okay, at the slightly higher end of the market, that is. But talk to buying agents who have relationship with estate agents, who have that knock-on effect. You know, we've become quite lazy as a nation that everything is there at our fingertips, on our phone. Look at the revenue that Rightmove are looking to do. You know, they are looking to grow, but to 2028, they are looking to have an underlying operating profit of more than £420 million by 2028. That is what is so phenomenal about that business. As I say, there are better portals. I'm quite happy to say that openly. Yep. Yep. I frankly don't care whether Rightmove hear me say that because it's true. Our very own Charlie Landon, Best Agent, that is a portal that has every single listing in the country on it, come what may. And it is all about getting better value, both as a business, as an agent, and as a consumer. Now, let me also tell you, Rightmove's fees are massive.
Yeah.
And if Rightmove's fees were not so big to agents, then sales fees would come down because we would not, as agents, have such a huge cost to pay for portal advertising. And as I said, I've been completely open about it. My monthly subscription for On the Market is less than the increase that I was enforced by Rightmove in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
So my On the Market complete subscription is less than that increase. And that is, in my view, criminal. However, as an agent, I cannot not be on Rightmove.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's that, you know, can't live without thing, and yeah, yin and yang. And I'm pleased you brought even to a degree buying agents into the equation, because you know there are some great people out there, like, as you mentioned, Jerome Lotto. And I mean, when you look at the pictures of some of the, as you say, higher end property, you do drool at some lovely, lovely property that he's looking after there. All right, well, before we move on to the next thing, I'm going to pin you down here to a sentence or less, Simo. Do you think...
Oh, I can't do a sentence or less, you know that.
You're going to have to, it's Christmas. Do you? This is my Christmas wish to you. Do you think that on the market are definitely going to smash that stranglehold then of Rightmove? Can they do it?
I think they can, but they need to get the buy-in from their clients, their customers. They need the agents to buy into it and be with them on that journey.
That was pretty much a sentence.
A paragraph.
A couple of commas in there, maybe. And the odd colon. Very odd colon. On the best known...
Don't talk about colons.
I'll try not to. On the best known podcast app for Christmas 2023, this is The Right Move, the leading property podcast. Does Charlie Lambdin think there should be more government intervention in the property market? Find out in Charlie Says It Happens Very Soon. First, the self-build that we've been following for a little while now in Northamptonshire, hear where it's at and pick up some great advice too. Here's Alan.
The blockwork's gone up now, so we're about up to roof level, and quite excitingly, some steels have arrived, and the pads on which the steels rest are all in position. And then later on this week, we will be having a roof put on, so it'll be quite nice, rather than having what's become a skating rink in the flooded inside of it. Once it's got a roof on and we're a bit more airtight, it'll be quite exciting. The steels have already gone up for the where the bifold doors are going. I don't think the builders mind me sticking my oar in every few minutes, but we've only got about three or four internal doors, and I've moved two of them already. As it starts building, you think to yourself, well, actually, that door's not going to be very good there. Let's put it there instead. But as we're still in the process of sort of working out where everything's going to be, it doesn't matter if you do a few tweaks on the inside. As it progresses and you see the size of the build and where things are going to be going, then you suddenly think to yourself, well, actually, that door's not going to be any good there. Let's move it over there. I've noticed inside that the builder was building some nice columns, and he suggested that he built them in stone as internal features. And the one that next to the bifold doors looks absolutely wonderful. But he's put another one in, which is next to what's going to be our back door. And he's left a recess in this for me to concrete a safe in. Not that there'll be any money left over after this, of course, but it'll be somewhere nice to keep your passports. There's an awful lot more scaffolding gone up this week to get to the gable ends and that, so that the stonemason can do his business at the top there and make the two gable ends look beautiful. But there's that much scaffold in it looks more like a bird cage or a monkey cage, or even a brass monkey cage with this weather. Also been very, very busy doing the Christmas menu for the pub, so lots of winter warming dishes on there for you. So yeah, come and see us.
Thanks, Al.
This is Father Christmas,
and this is the chief elf, Brian.
And we'd like to wish you a very happy Christmas from the leading property podcast.
And can I recommend the panko prawns? I actually don't know if they're on the winter warming menu because I haven't studied it, but they're always good value. Our guest, Simo, forthcoming very soon, is from daytime telly, national daytime TV, and it's going to be our pleasure to chat to someone who is, well, fantastic, aren't they, with interiors and upcycling.
Are you going to give us a bit more of a, you know, intro, or am I doing, because, you know, this excitement that's growing.
Yeah, yeah, palpably. It's soaring away at the moment, off the scale. Well, Charlie's going to do his thing in a second anyway, but what else can I tell you? Ah, right, there was a time she could have told you what it's doing outside. How about that? There you go. See, not even you know that. Anyway, you're going to know really soon who it is. We're so pleased to have a guest of this caliber and Stanley on, and it's going to happen soon. Let's get some Charlie Says on. Line it up, Simo.
Come on, Charlie. Let's hear it.
The Autumn Statement. This is really interesting. A lot of people had very high expectations and hopes that there would be government stimulus, especially amongst the people who believe that the government won't let house prices fall, as though they think the government controls house prices, which it doesn't. The government controls policy, which affects the housing market, but it does not control house prices. Has the government artificially inflated house prices in the last 15 years? Absolutely, with things like Help to Buy. But this particular autumn statement, or mini budget, was, I think, most interesting for the complete lack of anything for the housing market. There were people expecting a stamp duty cut or a stamp duty holiday. I mean, very few first-time buyers pay stamp duty anyway, so I'm not sure how much difference that would have even made. And there were people expecting some sort of intervention, some sort of mortgage guarantee scheme. The only thing they did was they extended the existing mortgage guarantee scheme, which doesn't have much take-up anyway because it's only for people with a 5% deposit, and not many people are buying with a 5% deposit in this market. And they've extended that by 18 months to June 2025. I found that interesting, that choice of when to extend it to, because that suggests to me that that is at least how long they are expecting the market to stay depressed, for want of a different word. In social rents, there's been a cap on how much councils will pay for private rent. That's been lifted slightly to allow for inflation and, of course, the big increases in rent, and that will provide some relief for those most in need for it. That was a small amount of good news, but that's not going to affect the market overall. Now, what happens next? Well, there's the spring budget, the real budget, the actual budget coming in spring 2024, which of course is going to be election year. And they may yet pull some sort of rabbit out of the hat in the shape of Help to Buy ISAs, a new one, or a new Help to Buy scheme, both of which would be ill-advised. And what I'm hoping is that they choose to continue to not interfere and to let the market do its thing and recalibrate and settle to its natural level. That's what needs to happen. On balance, most people will be better off if the market is allowed to be free and untampered with and unmanipulated and just left alone to find its natural equilibrium. That's what needs to happen. Interest rates, I think slowly but surely, people are beginning to realize that interest rates now are probably where interest rates are going to be for the foreseeable future. And in fact, we are at what was the long-term average for interest rates. I think that's been a really bitter pill to swallow for a lot of people who've never known anything other than very, very low interest rates. And I think a lot of people also get confused and think that the government sets interest rates, and it doesn't. The Bank of England sets it independently from the government. The Bank of England decides what it wants to do with interest rates independently of the government. You might be cynical about how true that is or not, and I'm not going to comment on that. But officially speaking, the Bank of England sets interest rates, not the government. And people need to remember that, I think. Finally, I think that the reason, in fact, that there isn't or can't be any government stimulus is because it's too expensive to prop something up that's falling naturally anyway. It's not risky for them when the market is rising to provide stimulus, because the way they've been providing it has actually given them some exposure to the upside of the market as well, for example, with the Help to Buy loans. In a falling market, you don't want to be the person bailing anything out. You can't bail out mortgage holders anyway unless you're going to bail out people who've been hit by high rents, because rent inflation has been higher than house price inflation for some time. So the government's in a pickle, and actually, I wasn't expecting anything to happen in the budget. Relatively nothing did happen in the budget. But will they do something in spring? I really don't know. I hope that they don't. I hope they leave it undisturbed. But will they try and do something to help win votes at the election? Who knows? They might do. We'll see.
All right, at the risk of oversimplifying what Charlie's just said there, Simo, he doesn't believe that it's for the government, the government's position, to stick their nose any further, any deeper into the housing market. Agree?
Yeah, I think so. What we need to do is we need to stimulate the rest of the economy, really. And then that has the knock-on effect to the housing market.
Right, there you go. Now, let's get our guest on. What a Christmas prezzy. We have got Am I saying it or are you saying it?
Oh, you go for it. You fixed it up. You take the credit. Yeah. You know, it's down to you. It's down to you. There's no I in team, JP.
Oh dear. Let's not have a Christmas falling out, for goodness sake. We've got we've got Georgina Burnett, who is at the top of her game. She's on ITV's This Morning. She's also the home genie, and interiors are her thing.
When it comes to property, every little elf's this is the right move.
The home genie and this morning's very own Georgina Burnett. Hello, how's you?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. It's really great to have you on. Really excellent. I want to look at interiors, obviously, in particular with you. What do you think about that label, good taste? She's got good taste. He hasn't got good taste. Is it helpful, unhelpful? Do some have it more than others? What's your take on that?
I think it's really hard to use a phrase like that, because you could take one person that you'd walk into their home and it'd be like, wow, this is amazing. And it might be very minimalist, might be quite expensive fittings, everything like that. And then you could walk into somebody else's house and it's completely different. And maybe everything's upcycled. Maybe there's some, like, quirky bits about. And you're still saying, wow, that's amazing. The only thing I would say is that when there hasn't been much effort put into a place, when colours are not well put together, then I think that's the case where you're not necessarily, wouldn't necessarily want to use the phrase bad taste because it feels really judgmental. Yeah. But as maybe they don't have as much of an eye for it.
Oh, yes.
And I do think that is something, yeah, that I've agreed with lots of other people that are into interiors, is that you might have completely different taste to somebody else, but actually there is something, and I do believe that to a degree you're born with it, because I think some people have, you know, strengths in other areas. That you can have an eye for something, but you might have completely different tastes. And I think that's probably driven by, you know, it's like the nature and nurture thing. That's driven by your life up till now, basically.
Yeah. I really like that he or she has got or hasn't got the eye. It's kind to Georgina. It just sounds very palatable.
It's politics.
It sounds like a euphemism. It's interesting you should talk about that sort of straight away and good taste, because your very own website, georginaburnett.com, shows these various lovely interiors that illustrate your work. So, you know, you were saying you think it could be something you're born with. So style, panache, etc. Have you always had it?
Well, I've always had a passion for interiors. I'm certainly thinking back to, I've got these amazing photos of rooms, like when I was at university, you know, going from one place to another where we were living. And I would stay up 3 nights in a row. I wouldn't be doing my essays. I'd be doing my room up. And yeah, I look back to it now, my old housemate laughs at me that I used to hang old CDs from the ceiling as a feature. Like, my taste has grown up since then.
Yeah.
I always had a passion for it. And I remember from quite a young age, what, you know, my birthday present was being able to interior design my bedroom. And that was a fairly young age. And I remember, I think I was 11 or 12, and I hired a sander to sand the floorboards in my bedroom. And I wasn't allowed to show my dad because I wasn't actually supposed to do that, you know. So I think there was always the passion there. And over time, you know, taste changed. And actually, you know, I'm in a house right now that I decorated sort of 8 years ago, and it massively needs to change. So it's one of those things, really, that I think tastes change over time as well. And your kind of love of colours changes massively over time too.
So Georgina, yeah, talk us through decorating a room. You're looking at a space that's really tired. Where should you start?
Well, I think the first thing that I say to people is, yes, you can be maybe guided by trends. Everyone seems to be obsessed with trends. And I have to say, I'm somebody who doesn't look at fashion and say, oh, wow, that's in fashion, I must wear that. You know, I have to dress. I don't have your standard figure, so I have to dress for what suits me. But I also dress for what makes me feel happy. And I think that's really important with interiors as well, that you are guided by what makes you smile. And it might be that you have a nod to trends. It might be that, you know, that kind of leads certain kind of ways that you go with colors, but you have to love those colors. You have to love that room, because otherwise you're just sat there thinking, well, it's really fashionable, but, you know, I feel really uncomfortable. I think that's a real shame that you're kind of almost doing it to kind of impress other people when you're the one that's going to be sat in that room most of the time. So I think when somebody is going, say they're just looking at doing one particular room, I'm big into colour psychology. I think you have to work out what emotion do you need to evoke in that room. So for some people, sat in my living room right now. Mm. For some people, if they have stressful jobs, their living room has to be a room that calms them down, and therefore there are certain colors that are going to do that. For me personally, I have a home office and I work anywhere in the house but in my home office and I sort of, depending on where the light is in the house in the day, the sun, you know, where the sunlight is where I tend to be. So actually my lounge for me is more of a place where I want to be inspired and I want to feel kind of woken up. So I would have, you know, I've got teals and oranges that kind of like that kind of wake me up a bit more. It's all about working out what you, and sometimes that can be hard, whether you're in a couple, whether you're a family, because not everybody's going to be feeling the same way. So it's about a little bit of compromise sometimes, which I absolutely hate. I hate compromise when it comes to interiors. Oh yeah, I'm going through a divorce right now and I'm like very excited about my next place where I do not have to compromise. Totally what I want. But people need to look at colors and say, right, how does this color make me feel? How does this color make me feel? And that can help guide you.
You do get that thing where you only intend to do just one room, but then you finish and it shows up the next room. Do we have to be disciplined and just know where to stop?
And I'll be honest, I'm thinking about my own homes here. I've been guilty of this, that actually I've always felt like everything needs to be done, you know, by tomorrow. And for me, sometimes it's been actually because I've got a magazine or a newspaper, which is shoot my house, so it really does have to be done. I think, you know, one thing I've been saying to people is, you know, and I have two young kids, I've got a career, I try and do the school run as much as I can. So I don't have a huge amount of time. I am really excited about this next space because I've told myself whether I can actually stick to this is another question, that I am going to do one room at a time. And I'm going to take my time over those rooms. And I think actually, rather than saying, right, I'm only going to do one room and stop with it, I would say to people, okay, have your priority list. So which is the most important room to you? And maybe do that one first. You will be compelled to do another room after you've done that room, because like you say, it does show up other bits. But kind of like giving yourself a little bit of space. This is where my kind of life coaching comes, my home coaching comes in, is actually giving yourself a bit of a break and saying, right, fine, okay, I've done this room, and now I'm thinking, right, the next room needs doing. But saying, how about I have a bit of a break? Or I give myself a deadline for that room, but I know that that deadline is achievable, so that there isn't stress, because the last thing you want is to be stressed about that. You know, I think we all realized during lockdown that your home has to be your haven. And therefore, if you're sat there stressing about the fact that, you know, the living room is great, but the bedroom now needs work doing to it, then tell yourself, I will do that room, but I'm going to park it right now and get on with other parts of my life. And then I'll do that when I'm rejuvenated again.
Okay, well, the genie has spoken. You did obviously allude there to how the home environment, I guess, can hold someone back. You know, it can be that pronounced that it can bring someone down if it's not right. So just how bad can it get, Georgina, and what tend to be the causes?
Well, it's really interesting because I trained as a life coach. I actually trained as a corporate and executive coach. I lost count now how many years ago. And I was coaching people just purely around their goals. At the same time, I was also buying properties, doing them up, selling them, and sort of, you know, going from one to another. And I then sort of one day had one particular client, and he's, you know, I don't give him his name, but he's always said that he's happy for me to tell his story. And I'd always had success with my clients, and he was a sticking point, and he'd be all enthused during the session. And then the next session, he'd come back and I'd say, right, have you got on with your homework? And he hadn't done anything. And it was really frustrating me. So I just said, look, can I come to your place and see, you know, what's happening when you go home? And it was really interesting because this guy was in his early 30s. It just reminded me of when I was a student. And, you know, the kind of places that we live in there in terms of how it was furnished, it sort of mess and all that sort of thing. It was just instantly, oh, I totally see why you're going home. And this is how it's, you know, and he didn't fit in that environment at all. And he explained to me, yes, this is actually the place I've lived in since I was a student. I haven't changed anything since then. So we took one of his rooms, we called it his power room, which obviously we did very much tongue in cheek. and we chose the colours that inspired him. We smartened it up. It grew up. And actually, I love upcycling. And one of the things I love about upcycling is you can take a piece of furniture you've owned your entire life. You've changed, obviously. People change through their lives. So therefore, you kind of update that piece of furniture to suit you now. So you're not saying, oh, get rid of it, just like you wouldn't get rid of parts of yourself that were there 10 years ago. You've just updated it. And it was really weird. It was like a light bulb switching on with him. And suddenly he wanted to start his own business, give up his job and start his own business. And that was it. He just literally went sky high. And that's when I started doing this with people, you know, helping them to reach their goals through their environment. So that's, to me, that's a really clear indication that your environment guides you.
Yeah.
And I do need to point out that's not necessarily the case with everybody, because we all have different drivers. But certainly with the people that I've worked with, it has made a big difference. And that's all about colour psychology. That's all about kind of even just clutter. You know, I'm big into the whole decluttering and organising your space, because definitely believe that a tidy house is a tidy mind. And therefore, you know, if you need to focus on something, you don't want anything distracting you.
I definitely agree. And you know what, even to the degree, Georgina, that I think that this makes me sound sort of almost over the top about it, but I think, you know, if you get into your car is a wreck inside a mess. It just feels chaotic. You know, it's just got to be
sorted
out. Oh, sorry. Is this a thorny subject?
No. I mean, I've got two kids. Do you know what? The most genius thing, sorry, this is completely away from materials, but the most genius thing I ever did was put a bin, in like a proper bin. It's just like a, you know, plastic waste paper bin in the back of the car, where I'm now training the kids to put their rubbish in the bin.
Fantastic.
You know, they're still like that. I mean, from the summer, there's still sand in it and all that kind of thing. But you know what? The litter is in one place, and I feel like I'm winning in one way. But yeah, don't judge my car.
No.
Because for some reason, it doesn't extend to my car.
So when you're on an interiors project, you know, with more and more architects and builders seeing sustainability as essential, has that had an effect on you and what you do?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, so I've always upcycled, and actually upcycling is one of the most sustainable things you can do when it comes to your home, because actually you can buy all these new kind of eco-friendly things, but the best thing you can do is just keep reusing and repurposing and upcycling furniture that you already have, because then you're not sending it to landfill, you're not buying new stuff. And I've always done that. I wasn't doing it when I was younger because I thought it was sustainable. I hadn't really thought about that. But now, for me, this whole throwaway society thing is huge, and it's a bit of a battle with me, because obviously when I'm helping people with their homes, you know, some stuff has to be bought new. Well, it doesn't have to be, but you know, depending on the client, that is going to happen. So it's about sort of finding a good balance. But also with properties, properties I've been doing, and the one I built actually a couple of years ago, I was really trying to find sustainable ways to do it in an affordable way. So things like it has an air source heat pump. Obviously that's not so much about the interiors, but all the furniture in that property is upcycled. Even like the dining table and benches are made from the excess of joists that we had for the build. And, you know, above it is an upcycled bicycle wheel chandelier. But yeah, everything is upcycled in there. And like the flooring is made from, it's a bit like luxury vinyl in terms of its feel and look, but it's actually made of recycled materials and is recyclable itself as well. So it's, you know, trying to find ways. I'm not saying it's carbon neutral or anything like that. That's the dream for me. But yeah, it's huge. And I live in a house that's very cold, so I'm always trying to find ways to save energy wherever I possibly can. So like right now, although it's warm outside, my house is cold, but you know, I'm not putting the heating on. I've got a heated blanket on me instead. The poor kids are very used to that as well. You know, it's like, no, we put extra layers on.
When interiors are a final flourish, is it easy to navigate that relationship with other trades on a build? Or, you know, do you have to be overly tactful, for example?
Yeah, I don't know. I've fallen out with a lot of builders. And actually, you know, if I can kind of segue from the sustainability side of things, what I've done up a lot of period properties And the one of the main things I've fallen out with builders over is saving things. So, you know, I say to them at the beginning, if there's anything you have to take down, you don't throw it in the skip. And so, you know, for example, Victorian house picture rail, the plaster is blown, so we're having to bring it all down. There's no choice around that. But I'm saying save that picture rail. That is Victorian picture rail. I'm not going to put that into landfill and go and buy new stuff. That is utterly crazy. And I'd come round, and what happened? They'd thrown it into the skip. So I am climbing into the skip and I'm pulling it back out again, and it goes back up. You know, we do the new walls and it goes back up. And so you could look at this from a few different points of view. Obviously, that is far more sustainable. I also believe that you have to save or preserve these beautiful period features. And it saves money in the end. It saves a fortune in the end. You know, you've got a big house and you're saving like a picture rail, you're not paying for new picture rail. That is saving a fortune. And so I do fall out with builders because for them, time is money. And actually, they're kind of thinking, well, it's much easier for me to rip that out and put it in the skip. Sure. The client will pay for the new picture rail. And I'm not saying all builders are like this. Of course they're not. But there are certain ones that I've worked with where that's been the case, and it's driven me mad. So, and I you think I'm tactful right now, but when I'm sort of halfway through a build and things aren't going to plan, I lose it.
Georgina, it's been really great having you on. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
And just to say, GeorginaBurnett.com is her website. So her name, GeorginaBurnett.com, that's the website for the Home Genie. There's loads of videos and great pointers up there if you're stuck with colours, paper, upcycling, recycling, etc. And we're very grateful to Georgina for being on the podcast. Simo!
And why don't you go to that website instead of Rightmove on Boxing Day?
How about that? Do you know, you have scored a multitude, myriad brownie points with Georgina for plugging that over the Rightmove website.
There we go.
There you go. Next thing, you'll be on daytime TV. Simo, I'm going to say
it's my agent.
Exactly. Mr. 15% or Ms. A very, very happy Christmas to you, all our guests, and to the family. And I think it's time to raise a sherry. Compliments of the season to you, sir.
And to you, JP. And we will see you on the other side. And there's that sherry there.
Chin chin until the new year. Enjoy Christmas, Simo. See you then.
10-4, JP.
Ho, ho, ho. Or ho cubed, as we say in the trade. You're listening to The Right Move.